Welcome back to Ball Year Round Podcast. Today we have Coach Robert Edwards on with us with our Sunday stories. And Coach Edwards actually got his start, coaching basketball as a manager at Nebraska. And after Nebraska, he went ahead and moved on to be a grad assistant at University of Nevada. And then after Nevada, he moved on and video coordinator at Texas A&M Corpus Christi. And then after that, now he's moved on and he is the video coordinator again at New Mexico. So Coach Edwards, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, no problem. We really appreciate you and thanks for coming on. And you know, Coach Edwards and I, we met while he was at Victory Rock for the summer, and he was leading up the camps, and it was super exciting to meet him and kind of hear his journey coming from a Big Ten school like Nebraska and what he was able to do as a manager and learning from him and kind of really being able to pick his brain. So we really appreciate him coming on. Coach Edwards, what was it that kind of got you started with, you know, basketball and kind of, you know, got you the itch and the love for the game?
Yeah, I think it all started with my parents. I'm the youngest of three boys, and so everything we did in our household was a competition, no matter if it was, you know, first one to finish their food at the table, first one to get, you know, home at the end of the day, whatever it was, we were going to compete. And so growing up, sports was a big part of all of our lives. My dad was a sports junkie, my mom as well. Mm-hmm. So it was a no-brainer that when, you know, you were able to walk, you were able to dribble a basketball or throw a football or throw a baseball. And so growing up, all my brothers, we all played all, you know, we didn't choose just one sport. I'm very grateful for my parents for that. It was always, you're going to play football in the fall, basketball in the winter, and baseball in the spring. You're going to run track. You're going to, you know, you're going to play golf. You're going to play soccer. You're going to play whatever it is, you're going to play. And also looking back on it, now that I'm older, I think it was their way just to keep us out of trouble and keep us, you know, active and actually doing things, because a lot of times kids just sit up in their rooms. And for us, it was no video games. You were outside doing something. And, you know, growing up in Overland Park, Kansas, it was a great spot to do that, where you can go play, you know, football on a grass field with, you know, 10 of your closest friends, and you're just going to go play. Or basketball, there was a court a block away from my house. And, you know, the rule was when the streetlights came on, you came home. But until then, you were playing sports. So that's what got me started. Just my parents pushing us to go outside and play, and my two older brothers kind of leading the way.
For sure. So I guess, where do you fall in? Are you the oldest? Are you the youngest? Where do you fall?
Yeah, I'm the youngest. I'm the youngest, and I'm the smallest too. So I always like to note that I'm also the toughest because of it. So don't forget that. My oldest brother played college football. My middle brother's a black belt. So I got my butt whooped a couple of times in the household. So I'm the toughest, but I'm also the youngest.
Love it. Yeah, no, definitely. That makes sense. So I guess then with that kind of that tough attitude and, you know, obviously your leadership as well. And, you know, did you play basketball in high school?
I did.
Yeah. Okay.
I wasn't very good, you know, and I'm thankful this is a podcast. If I was to stand up right now, it wouldn't be a whole lot there. I'm only 5'8". So I played in high school, but honestly, you kind of know when you get into high school what's going to be your next path. And I honestly, I knew I wasn't going to play in the NBA. My goal was to hopefully get a scholarship somewhere at a D2 or NAIA school or a D3 spot and just play 4 years of basketball. I just love playing basketball. And so I played in high school, wasn't very good, wasn't on a very good team, but just kind of just, you know, you fall in love with just the team aspect of it and doing that. And then also played baseball and football, like I said. So just anything that involved the team and playing a sport, I was there.
Awesome. What was your best sport in high school, Coach?
You know, really, it was baseball.
Nice.
I was a baseball, because, you know, baseball doesn't require a lot of height, which is great for guys short. Us short kings love baseball.
Little Dustin Pedroia action.
Yeah, exactly. Dustin Pedroia. And so it was baseball, but I suffer from I can't sit still a long time. So baseball really wasn't the sport for me, but it was probably my best sport looking back on it. So my dad's a huge baseball fan, so he wishes I would have stayed with it.
Nice. Did your dad play baseball?
He did. He tried to mess around the minor leagues for a few years. My older brother had a he was a really good baseball player, had a couple opportunities to play in the minors. Nothing really huge, but, and so they kind of pushed me towards baseball because that was the family sport, really, I would say.
Very cool, man. And I guess, so as you move through that, like, what kind of got you connected with Nebraska? How did that come about?
Yeah, how'd the Kansas guy end up in Nebraska? Other side of the
side of the border. I went to high school in Overland Park, Kansas, at the Blue Bayou West High School. My senior class, 90% of them either went to KU, K-State, or Johnson County Community College, which was right up the road. I didn't want to go to high school for another 4 years. So I didn't want to go to KU. I didn't want to go to K-State. And I didn't want to go to JCC, but I wanted to be close to home. And so Nebraska is a 3-hour drive from my house. And like I said, I'm a huge sports fan. So any school that had a big sports brand and sports teams, I was going to go. And so University of Nebraska stuck out immediately because it was close to home. The football program was legendary, not now, but it was back in the 90s. And so I just saw in Lincoln, Nebraska, like the first time I went there, I kind of fell in love with the place. It's a down home Midwestern town, which I love. Everyone there is nice and welcoming. And so I saw Nebraska, and it was me and another person with only two people in my high school class to go there, which was pretty cool. And so it was pretty cool.
No, that's great. And, you know, what kind of got you connected with the basketball program while you were on campus? I saw that you were the a minor in coaching while you were at Nebraska. Did that have anything to do with it?
So the minor came after I became a manager. I actually, so it's kind of a weird story how I got into coaching. I guess you can say I kind of lucked into it, or I fell into it. I was an athletic training major at Nebraska. I wanted to be an athletic trainer my whole life leading up to them. Cause I knew when I was in high school, I wasn't going to play a sport in college. After, like, during my senior year, I kind of realized that, and I wanted to stay connected to sports. And so I thought being an athletic trainer would be great. You know, the super smart guys, they can tape ankles, they're around it. The pressure really isn't there of winning and losing as much. And so I went to Nebraska to be an athletic training major, had nothing to do with the basketball team my first year. Made a fatal mistake. I guess it was a mistake then, but now looking back on it, it was kind of a blessing. I took chemistry and biology at 8 a.m., and 9:30 a.m. back to back, Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, right? And so I failed both of those classes. And if you're an athletic training major, you can't fail biology and chemistry. Right. And so I come back after my first semester in school. I come back from winter break. My parents got a letter saying that, hey, your son just failed two classes. He's at risk of being kicked out of the athletic training program. He's on academic probation. He might get kicked out of school because his GPA is super low. And I walk into my house trying to relax from, you know, the first semester of college. My mom's crying. She doesn't know what to do. And so before I leave again to go back up, they tell me, my mom and dad do, they say, hey, either you got to find a job that is going to add value to your life or going to add something to your future. Like, you can't just go work a part-time job at a gas station at night. You have to go find something that you believe that you would do for the rest of your life. And I had no clue what that was, because I wanted to be an athletic trainer. And there's really no jobs you can do to be an athletic trainer when you're not a licensed athletic trainer. And so the day before I leave, I go get a haircut from the guy who'd been cutting my hair since I was a baby. And he told me, like, you should look into coaching. Like, you know the game of basketball. You're good with people. You might be a good coach. You should just try it. And so I applied to be a manager at the University of Nebraska, got hired, again, not knowing what it was. Like, I just got hired as a manager thinking, you know what, this might be a good opportunity to be around the athletic trainer a lot because I'll be in the gym. Yeah. Yeah, I knew nothing about coaching college basketball. I knew nothing about college basketball besides what team I like. I was a huge Kansas Jayhawk fan, obviously. Yeah. And so I figured, you know, this might be a good way to be a close athletic trainer, and kind of just fell in love with the coaching part of it more than the athletic training part of it. So I switched my major to communications, got a minor in coaching, and here we are X amount of years later.
Nice. So was that your first coaching experience when you got to Nebraska?
Yeah.
No camps, no nothing. That's awesome.
No camps, no nothing. I learned very quickly what college basketball is like, especially as a manager. So my first year as a student manager was Tim Miles' second year at Nebraska. It was the first year that Nebraska basketball went to the tournament and since the early 90s. So it's about 20 years since we've been to the tournament. So the place was just buzzing. They just opened up a beautiful arena in downtown Lincoln. So I think I just caught on the right time and I fell in love with the, to be honest with you guys, I probably fell in love with the wrong things with college basketball coaching, like the fans and the, oh my God, that guy's a manager. Look at the cool gear he gets. Look at all that cool stuff. And I fell in love with that spot. Like I got to see myself on TV, which, you know, when you're 18, 19 years old, that's pretty cool. And you got to say something like, hey, yeah, I know this guy. He's the starting point guard. I know him. Yeah, like me and Tim Miles are tight. I fell over that stuff, not knowing there was so much extra work that goes into being in this business. But it was awesome that 4 years I got to spend in Nebraska.
Definitely. When you were visiting home, did you happen to get a chance to go check out the Kansas team? Because I think it was like 2014. There was like five or six pros, like half of them still playing, right?
Oh, yeah. I would try to sneak back. Oh, yeah. They had some good teams. I try to sneak back at least once a year and catch a game in Allen. My dad was been a lifelong Kansas fan, so he put it in my blood that Kansas Jayhawks are number one. And so I would try to go back and see a game in Allen, and it's a beautiful place. It's awesome. It's a special place for college basketball.
Most definitely. That's a place that I hope I get to some point, man, for real. And
it has to be on the bucket list. I think for every coach, it's on the bucket list. It really is. I mean, the rules of basketball are there now, and it's awesome.
Definitely. And could you talk a little bit about your role as a manager, just to kind of say, like, I guess, like a bit about the day-to-day that you did?
Yeah, being a manager, it's one of the best and worst jobs in college basketball. You know, I'm so lucky that I got to start off as a manager, because it really builds the foundation of what I am today. You know, the work ethic you have to have as a manager. Like, there's no job that you can't do as a manager. You go from taking out the trash to helping with the scout to working out the starting point guard to, you know, maybe, hey, go pick up, you know, somebody's laundry, or go clean up. Someone just spilled their protein shake on the ground, go clean it up. Like things like that, that people normally don't want to do, you're asked to do as a manager. And we had a saying at Nebraska, no job too big, no job too small. And so that kind of, I carry that with me today because it is what I am. And being a manager, it's, you know, you're getting there an hour and a half before any player walks through the door. You're setting everything up, balls, you know, you're getting the towels ready. You're wiping the floor when somebody falls on the ground. You have to know the plays just in case you might get thrown into a drill that you have to know the plays. And so it really pushes you to learn as much as possible quickly. Because you don't want to, you can't say no. And so you catch yourself kind of doing that sometimes.
Most definitely. Now that's a great perspective, because it's like sometimes everybody like looks at what you were talking about, the lights and the show and, you know, kind of being on TV, and they don't understand kind of what goes into it. You know, and as you kind of move forward, you know, what kind of led you to knowing that you wanted to kind of really pursue and, you know, move on to that next level, to move up to another level of Division I.
I think I was just a typical college kid. You know, you have fun for your 4 years in college, and then around that scene, the early parts of your senior year, you kind of realize like, oh, this is coming to an end quickly. So you got to find that next thing. And again, like even when I left Nebraska, I didn't know I wanted to be a coach still. I knew I loved this business. I loved the game of basketball. I thought I was good enough to be still working it, but I didn't know what the next step was. Like, this is how naive I was. I thought I was the head manager at Nebraska my last 2 years. I thought I should just walk into a Power 5 video coordinator job or a Power 5 ops job just because, like, hey, I'm the head manager at Nebraska. Like, you know, Nebraska is a Big Ten school. Like, you know, Tim Miles is rolling it, having good success. And so when I left Nebraska, I got humbled very quickly because it's hard to find a job, as you guys know, in this business. And it's hard to stay in this business. So I remember asking the video coordinator at Nebraska, name is Gregory Eaton, somebody I talk to still to this day, who's been a huge mentor for me. Like, hey, what's the next step for a guy like me? He said, yeah, gotta go find a GA job. I said, what's a GA? Like, we didn't have GAs at Nebraska. Like, what's a GA? A graduate assistant. It's basically an older manager. And I was like, okay, I can do that. So, like, where should I look? Like, I'm a Big Ten head manager. I show, am I going to Duke? Am I going to Kentucky? Like where am I going? He says, well, you're probably not going to go to Duke or Kentucky, but you might be able to find a job. And I think I wrote over 300 letters just trying to find a job, and no one gets back to you sometimes. If they get back to you, it's always like, hey, thanks for the letter, and that's it. And so I wrote a letter to Brandon Chambers, who was at Nevada as the ops guy. He wrote me back, and we started talking, and then a couple months later, he hired me as a GA and got to go pack my bags for Reno, Nevada, which I've never – at the time, I'd never heard of Reno. I thought it was Vegas, to be honest with you guys. I thought the University of Nevada was in Vegas. And so I hopped in a car with my mom and my mom and my dad, and we drove out to Reno, Nevada. And that was the start of my coaching career, I guess.
For sure. Yeah, no. And I guess for writing that letter, kind of, could you talk a little bit about that? Like, how did you structure that for anybody that, you know, is kind of thinking about writing to anybody?
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted it to stand out because, you know, I think every coach in the country gets about a million emails a day. Every coach probably gets 100 text messages, 50 calls a day. Especially if you're at a high major, you're getting calls, texts, emails, because it's so easy to do that stuff. I wanted to stand out, and I thought, like, how many people get a handwritten letter? Like, when's the last time you guys got a letter in the mail? Like, addressed to you, and it's handwritten to you. And so I just sat down, and I, you know, thanks to the power of Google, I got all the addresses to all the, I think I did every Power 5 school and some like Power 6, Power 7 schools. And I wrote a letter to everybody on staff. And it was just basically saying, hey, my name is Robert Edwards. I'm a senior manager at University of Nebraska. I'm looking to stay in this business. If you guys have a spot as a GA, I would love to hear from you. If not, I get it. I know this is a business. And so, like I said, I wrote probably 300 letters, and I probably heard back from 5 people, maybe. And one of them happened to be University of Nevada. And so I just, you know, any young coach trying to stand out, write letters. They work, I guess.
Definitely. That wasn't a bad time to luck into the Nevada program too. They had quite a squad those couple of years. They were winning 20 plus games, almost 30 those couple of years with the Martin twins. What was that like in practice with a couple of, you know, guys that you knew were kind of going to the league?
Man, it was awesome. I mean, you talk about guy, like the twins are, they were pros. They were pros before they were pros. I mean, they went about their business. They, every day they went to work, and they didn't have any, there was no distractions. And I think a lot of that goes to the twins, Caroline, who's also spent some time with the Lakers. But ultimately it came down to Musselman, you know, the coach, he made it so those guys had no distractions. It was school and basketball. That's all it was at Nevada. And we were like, I talk to the guys at Nevada who are GAs with me all the time, and we just say how lucky we were to be around that, especially so young in our careers. Like, you got to see what pros acted like every single day. And it shows, like, the twins are both still in the league. Caroline's still playing at a high level overseas. There's a few other guys on those rosters that are playing overseas still. And so we just locked down. We went to work every day, and it was awesome. Like you said, we won 29 games both years. Back-to-back Mountain West championships, and we went to the tournament both years, went to the Sweet 16. It was a great 2 years that I look back on, and every time, like, I catch myself daydreaming about those days, like, just saying, man, like, we had pros. Like, how many guys can say they've been around pro? And not just one pro, yeah. Multiple pros. Yeah. And so we were really lucky and really blessed.
Yeah, those were fun teams. Those were kind of like my dark horse favorites during the the tournaments those couple of years. Like, you know, there's not very many years where you're like, Nevada's my favorite. Like, but you happened to catch that wave, and that was a high scoring, good time offense to be around for sure. Was that kind of when you started to, like, you know, delve into more of the video coordinator stuff? Did Greg Egan, you mentioned, kind of start to mentor you then in terms of your transition?
Yeah. You know, Eaton, he did a great job with his group of managers. But I think the best thing about Eaton, he knew what each of us wanted to do, and he would design kind of how we went about our day-to-day as a manager to kind of fit what we wanted to do moving forward in our careers. And so I remember having this conversation, like it was yesterday. I told him, like, towards the beginning of my junior year, I was like, man, I really want to, I might want to do this the rest of my life. Like, I don't know what else I want to do. Like, I can't sit behind a desk. I can't, you know, I'm not good with working with my hands as far as building things. And so he told me, like, you should just learn the video as much as possible. Just learn the video. And again, it goes back to being at a place like Nebraska where it's the budget. You can have five extra laptops that all have sports code licenses. So I can take a laptop home and just cut games for fun on my couch while I'm sitting there watching a football game with my friends and just learning it that way. And, you know, I'm here at New Mexico now and I'm trying to teach our managers how to do some of that stuff. And, but yeah, no, it all started with Gregory Eaton kind of just pushing me towards doing the video because he knew that if I wanted to move on in this business, video is a big part of it. You know, everyone thinks it's all about player development and it is obviously, but you can't have player development without video. You know, you can't have a scout without video. You can't have practice without a video. And so it's kind of cool because it's looking back on like the things I do now is what he taught me as a manager. Like I still use the same coding window for sports code that I use as a manager. And I've been using it for 9 years now. And so it's awesome.
Man, that's such a valuable experience and relationship to have, you know, and like,
yeah,
like, you know, always to have somebody to reach back to. And, you know, can you kind of, I guess with your relationship with him now, do you still reach out to him now with any questions and do you guys still stay in contact?
Oh yeah. He is probably, he is probably one of the most important mentors I've had in this business because every time I call Eaton, I know he's going to pick up. I know he's going to tell me the truth, even if I want it or not, he's going to tell me the truth. And I'm always going to take something from the conversation. And so like I called him 2 days ago about some video stuff. And I know like if I ever have a question, because there's so much that goes into this stuff and there's so much I don't know. And so having him to call, knowing that he's going to pick up no matter what, if he doesn't pick up, he's going to call me right back. If he can't hop on the phone, he's going to text me. But whatever it is, he's going to reply to me and he's going to help me. And so he's been a huge part of my life. And, you know, it's a relationship that I don't see fading anytime soon.
That's awesome. I got a quick question terminology you used a second ago kind of flew over my head, and imagine some of our listeners, give us kind of a little dose of a little lesson in video editing in terms of what do you mean by the sports code coding window that you referenced earlier?
Yeah, so sports code is the Huddle Sports bought out sports code a couple years ago, and sports code is what I would say most teams use to break down their video. Kind of just, it's how you capture the game, capture practice. And the code window is what you use to do your, you know, it might be coding every player's shots or, you know, every offensive possession, defense possession, whatever it is. It's just a really cool, really, it, you kind of can geek out on it too. I haven't gotten that far into it yet, but there's a lot of people out there who can kind of geek out on it. You can break down like guys' shots. If you want to pull up all of, like Cody Martin's shots from the left wing, you can use sports code to do that and stuff like that. I mean, for basketball nerds like I am, it's really cool because it's on your computer, man. You can open up your laptop or get on your desktop anytime you want and just watch basketball, which is awesome.
Nice. Is that how you do your editing too? Is that your editing software?
Yep. That's how we do all of our practice edits, all our scout edits. It's a really cool thing. I mean, anybody who wants to move on in this business, I would learn sports code or synergy stuff as soon as possible because everybody uses it and you're going to have to know it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. That's good to know.
Oh, for sure. And when you do sports code, I'm familiar with it a bit. Are you able to kind of like have your own, you know, kind of the controls that you use, I guess, so everybody's would be a little bit different?
Oh, yeah. Everyone has a different way they use it because every coach is different. You know, I work for guys who really want to know the nitty gritty stuff, who want to know, like I said, like Cody Martin's left wing percentage. I work for guys who just, hey, give me the game. I just want to watch the game, stuff like that. And so you can go as deep as you want into it. You can keep it as basic as possible. It's whatever fits the guy you're working for.
Most definitely. How did your process go transitioning from Nevada when you had to officially start sending the resume out for quite a school student assistant kind of roles? What was that like?
It was hard. It was really hard. It was I think the same mindset kind of sat in when I left Nebraska, when I left Nevada. You know, we're coming off of back-to-back 29-win seasons, you know, back-to-back championships, a Sweet 16, back-to-back tournaments. Coach Muss was coach of the year. And so I thought, again, I should be able to just to walk into any job I want because, hey, I was at Nevada. I mean, we were top five in the country my last year. We were a really good team, had guys get drafted, guys play in the NBA. And so I remember when I left Nevada, Muss took the Arkansas job and is doing great things down there. Has them in the top 25 preseason this year. Uh-huh. I thought I should be able to walk into any job I want. But again, it's so hard to get a job. So I did the thing where a lot of ex-college kids, I guess, probably don't want to do. I went back home and I moved into the basement of my parents' house for about 3 or 4 months because I couldn't find a job. I really couldn't. I reached out to a whole bunch of people. I built great relationships with people that were really helping me behind the scenes trying to find a job, and nothing was clicking. It was, you know, the timing and luck just wasn't in my favor at the time. And then I got a call from Coach Wilson one day down in Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Again, a place I've never heard of, a school I never heard of, in the Southland Conference, a conference I'd never heard of at the time. And he said, we have a video coordinator spot. I'm interviewing 4 people. You're one of them. And I was, you know, I was at my house in Kansas and I was like interviewing 4 people. Like, what? I just left Nevada, man. We were top 5 in the country. Why are you interviewing people? I'm your guy. Like, you should hire me. He says, well, that's not how it works. Like, you got to come interview for the job. And so I remember I jumped in my car on a Friday afternoon, drove 12, 13 hours down to Texas A&M Corpus Christi, which beautiful spot right on the water down in South Texas, and interviewed for the job in the practice gym. I mean, it was just me and the head coach. And we just talked basketball, talked life for about an hour, hopped in my car. I drove down on a Friday, interviewed on a Saturday. But after the interview, I hopped back in my car to drive back up to back up to Kansas. By the time I got to Kansas, I was hired as a video coordinator. And he asked me on the call, he was like, hey, I want to hire you. I was like, great, I'll be there next month. He says, nope, you'll be here in a week. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I my life's in Kansas. All my, like, you want me to move across the country in a matter of days? I said, yeah, I'll see you on Thursday. And I said, all right. This was Sunday afternoon at the time. So, you know, thank gosh, I have 2 great parents that are willing to drop everything and help their kids. And they hopped in a U-Haul with me and we drove back down. And so we went from Overland Park, Kansas to Corpus Christi, Texas in about 2 days and moved into an apartment sight unseen, kind of just walked in, signed the lease, went to the gym. And my parents said, all right, we'll see you later. Your first job. Congratulations. And I went home on a random Sunday afternoon in Corpus Christi, Texas, dropped my bags, looked around and go, I have to unpack this apartment now. This is my home. I'm here for the next year. And so wow. It's kind of crazy how it worked out, but I'm glad it did.
Most definitely. Such a crazy, that's a great transition though. And what was the first day like on the job, man?
It was so up to that point, I was a manager, right? You have Gregory Eaton over you. If you make a mistake, Gregory Eaton's going to fix it, right? As a GA, I had Brandon Chambers, who's the ops guy. I had Hayes Myers, who's the player development guy at Nevada, kind of over me. So if I made a mistake, they're going to fix it before it becomes a huge deal. When I got to Corpus, there was nobody over me. It was, if the video was messed up, it was on me. If something didn't get done right, it was on me. And so that first day, you're looking around like, man, like, am I ready for this? Like, I don't know if I'm actually ready for this because it's like, okay, here's all the video stuff. Like, here's a box of wires. Here's a camera. Here's a computer. Go be the video coordinator. And I knew how to do the job. It sat in quickly. I was like, whoa, like, this is my baby now. Like, this is my department that I have to run. And I remember the first scout, they're like, all right, Rob, you got the scout. You know, you're going to help Coach Danoff do this scout for La Tech. And I'm just like, all right. Like, you know, here's a couple games, Coach. It's like, well, what do you think? Coach, I didn't watch them. Here are the games. He's like, well, no, like, you got to help. Like, you got to watch the games now. Like, you got to, like, what does player 13 do? Coach, he dribble passes and shoots. I don't know what to tell. And so it was kind of chaotic that first day and that first couple months, really, because you just like, you're learning on the fly while at the same time you're trying to give off the vibe that you know what you're doing, because you don't want to ever like let the guy who hired you down, yeah. Right? Like Coach Wilson took a chance by hiring an unproven GA from Kansas. He didn't have to do that. He could have hired the guy he'd known for years or hired the guy that, you know, his best friend recommended, but he hired some unknown. And so you didn't want to let him down. So I remember working like 14-hour days just trying to make sure I knew everything, or watching the same game 5 times. I didn't miss anything. And so it was kind of scary, but, you know, it's basketball at the end of the day. And so you just kind of, you pick it up and you learn it and you move on.
Absolutely. Wow, that makes sense, man. That's that part with the, you know, you don't want to let anybody down. I can definitely relate with that piece. And that is, it shows a lot about you too, though, you know, and your career and how you've moved on and helped everybody win and where you've been. So I guess, you know, while you were there, were there any games that, you know, that really stuck out to you that you enjoyed while you were at Corpus Christi?
Oh, yeah. One of the best games, probably one of the best games of my life, I would say from my point of view, was we went to SFA the same year that SFA beat Duke. They had a great team. Coach Keller had those guys rolling. And Corpus, I don't know if you guys know Corpus, it's not a big basketball school. It's a school that has – it's very lucky. It's the only school, Division I school, that's on an island. So you have that distraction, right, that we talked about before. You have this distraction of there's the beach. From where I sat in my office, I could walk to the beach every single day, And so we go to SFA. It's a tough place to play. The crowds are rocking. Keller has those guys rolling. And we won a very good team. We just played really, really well that night. We caught those guys on an off night, I think. And what made it even more special to me, because my really good friend worked for SFA. And so you got to kind of talk trash to him. And he'll call me about once a month still. I'd always bring that game up. Like, hey, we went to your house and beat you. Like, take that. We went to your gym and beat you when you were number one in the conference. The only home loss they've had at that place, I think it was like in 2 years, was Corpus Christi. And I got to be part of that staff. And it was a great game. The guys played well. We were hyped. And so we got it was a great win for the program and a great win for the team.
Definitely. What's it like playing there?
It's tough. I mean, it's tough. Keller has those guys. I hope I'm saying, yeah, it's Keller. He has those guys tough. It's going to be a hard game. They're going to guard you, defend you. I mean, it's the only word I can describe it's tough. I mean, I catch myself going back and looking at that box score thinking, how the heck did we win that game? Like, you talk about adversity. We were up 2, they were pressing us, and our point guard just throws the ball out of bounds. He literally just takes the ball and chucks it out of bounds, and we had it in on a stop. And so I think that's even more special, because, like, everyone talks about the game-winning shots that are so cool, but winning a game on a stop is hard to do, especially now, because you drive to the basket, more than likely you're going to get fouled. And those guys were wired to draw a foul, so they're going to – downhill drivers are going to put their head down and go. But ending on a stop and winning it that way was awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's cool. When you first got there, it kind of sounded like it was a little bit terrifying, but also kind of like empowering, because it was like just playing canvas kind of thing. Did you eventually kind of like settle into a routine, and what did that kind of look like on like your day to day? And did you kind of translate to UNM after, or is it a different version today?
You know, it's the same. It's the same thing today as it was when I was in Corpus. Me and the ops guy there, Kevin Reynolds, who was still talked to this day, another great mentor that I have. He always told me, like, you have to be the first one in the office. You can't get beat to the office by anybody on staff, by anybody in the athletic department. You got to be the one turning on the lights and unlocking the doors. He would always tell that to me, and so I took that and I rolled with it. I wanted to be the first one there, the last one to leave, and the work ethic that he kind of instilled in me, same as Eaton did and same as Musselman did and all the guys in Nevada. I took that to Corpus, and so day to day, it just looked like getting there early, making sure the film and edits was right, just watching as many games as possible for upcoming opponent, rewatching our practice from the day before or a game from the day before, and making sure coach had everything he needed for when he walked through the door. Like, I wanted to make sure that when Wilson walked through the door, he had everything. I mean, it got to the point where I knew exactly what time he was showing up. I would walk up to his office and make sure that the film was good and, you know, his desk was clear. And I, you know, another thing that Coach Reynolds always told me was, like, make sure you take stuff off of the head coach's desk. Don't ever add anything. Take stuff off of it. So every day I'd walk up to Wilson's office. Hey, anything I can do for you? Whatever it is, let me know. I'm always here to help you. I know I'm the video coordinator, but if it's, you know, either it's some ops stuff, I can take it off your plate. You know, going to all the assistants. Hey, if you need help with the scout, let me know. You know, whatever you need, I'm here to do it. And so it was a lot, and it was hard, but I'm thankful I got to do it.
Definitely. No, that's a great perspective, you know, just to share that part, you know, with, you know, always willing to, you know, take things off his desk as opposed to putting it on. That's a great advice, man. And, you know, kind of, can you talk a little bit, how was that transition from Corpus Christi to New Mexico? How did that come about?
Yeah, I would say it was 100% luck. So we went to the conference tournament when I was in the Southland, and it got shut down because of COVID. So we were one of the last college teams to play, because right after our game, they canceled the Southland tournament. Then the ACC came out and canceled their tournament. And then the Big East canceled their tournament. The NBA shut down that day. It was a very hectic day. And so we all just packed our bags and went back to Corpus, not knowing if we were going to have a next season. Like, no one knew. And so it was a weird time for a while. And then the school mandated that we all had to work from home. And so I go from going to the office every day at 6 a.m. and leaving at 7 or 8 to just sitting in my apartment. And so I was trying to find ways to help Corpus get better from my couch, basically. Mm-hmm. And one thing that Wilson really pushed on his staff was, you know, meeting new people and networking. And so we had a coaching clinic or a coaching chalk talk Zoom session, kind of like what we're doing right now, with a whole bunch of different coaches around Texas. And Coach Wilson is, bless his heart, he wasn't the best with technology. So I had to be on all of his calls and help him out. And so one day we were on a call, and I was just going through some drills that we did at Corpus, and Coach Wilson was talking about it. And I was kind of doing the video breakdown of it on my side. Uh-huh. And I got really lucky, because someone on that call named Brian Burton was really impressed by what I did. And he got my number. He called me, he reached out, and he said, "Hey man, like, I just want to reach out to you. I think you did a great job on that call. If there's anything I can do to help you, let me know." Which, you know, that's like the most, I don't want to say throwaway line in this business. Like, hey, if there's anything I can do, help me. Let me know. Call me if I can help you out in any way. Like, everyone always says that, but how many people really mean it? And so Brian Burton, he actually meant it. And so he, like, later, I want to say like a month later, like in the middle of summer, in the middle of a lockdown in Corpus Christi, Texas, which is a big deal in Texas. I don't know if you got, like, they don't shut down things in Texas. Like, it's Texas against the word, you know? Yeah. So COVID, they're like, all right, everyone has to go work from home. Everyone go home. And that was a huge deal. And so I remember I was sitting on my couch, and Brian Burton called me. He goes, "Hey, New Mexico has a video coordinator job. It's open. You should apply for it." That's all he said. And I said, all right, like, I'll apply for it. But usually when you see a job online, it's not really open. They just have to do that for HR stuff. So, you know, so I applied for the job, not thinking anything of it. A week later, like, a week goes by, I hear nothing about it. And so again, I'm focused on the next season at Corpus. You know, how can we get our team better to go compete in the Southland and go win the Southland tournament, which was our goal. We had a good group of guys coming back. We signed a lot of great JUCO players and high school players that, you know, we thought we had a really good team. Uh-huh. And so a week goes by, Brian calls me again. He goes, "Hey, did you apply for that job?" I was like, "Yeah, I applied. I haven't heard anything. No big deal. Thank you for the tip." He says, "All right, thank you." And he hangs up. And I'm like, okay, this is weird. Like, and he just called me to see if I applied. I didn't know what his angle was, you know? And that was honestly, I think that was just in my head thinking, okay, he must be doing this selfishly. Like, he must just be doing this to help him out somehow. I don't know how. And so the next day he texts me, hey, you didn't get a call from Ralph Davis, who was the video coordinator who just got bumped up to ops at New Mexico. You can get a call from him. Just take the call. I'm like, all right. Ralph calls me and goes, hey, so I saw that you applied. You're on a short list of guys, but I don't know how it's going to go. Like, I don't know what Coach Rowe wants to do. I'm like, okay, again, hey, man, no big deal. I get it. It's a business. Coach probably already has somebody in mind. And so he goes, yeah, let me talk to him and I'll get back to you. So I'm like, all right, another week goes by. Don't hear anything. And I'm sitting there like, all right, like, I'm glad he reached out. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, this is kind of like, I'm ready for Corpus. Like, let's start getting, like, we were kind of starting summer workouts during the pandemic. So you're doing everything outside in the Texas heat. And I remember I was on a run one morning and I got this weird number from a weird call from a 505 number. And it was another assistant at New Mexico. It's like, hey, Robert, this is Coach McHale. You know, Coach Weir wanted me to reach out and talk to you about maybe possibly interviewing for this job. I said, oh, yeah, I would love to interview for the job. You know, whatever you guys need me to do, I'll do it. And so I remember just hanging up that phone call and thinking, oh, okay, this actually might turn into something I can interview for. You know, hopefully I get in the top three. Like, that was my goal. Can I get into the top three where I can go meet the guys I can do in the interviewing and kind of build a relationship with them? I might not get the job, but, you know, maybe I can build a relationship with these guys in the sense where I could, you know, 10 years down the line, they might be a head coach and want to hire me. And I interviewed with Coach Weir a couple of days later. Coach Weir said, you know, I'll let you know. I got another call from another coach, interviewed me. I interviewed with like 20 different people, it felt like. I mean, everybody and anybody who was associated with the program, they just kept calling me and I just kept interviewing. And of course, it was a weird time because you're in the midst of a global pandemic where you can't go to New Mexico. Like, you can't come to the University of New Mexico and sit face-to-face with the head coach and meet him. And so Coach Weir did another Zoom interview with me a couple months after I first applied. And he said, you know, you're in my top two. It's between you and this other guy. I don't know what I'm thinking. I don't know what I'm going to do. But I just want to let you know you're in the top two. So keep working. And so at that time, I was like, all right, this is now 100% real. Like, I got to get going here. And it goes back to Coach Reynolds. He told me, it's like, okay, getting a job, it's kind of like getting a recruit. Like, you have to recruit a player. You can't go a day without calling a player if you really want the kid. You got to go recruit this guy. And that's how it is getting a job. And so I remember I reached out to everyone and anybody who might know Coach Weir, like even in the slightest way might know Coach Weir. And I was like, all right, if you know Coach Weir, can you please call him for me? Can you just please blow up his phone to the point where he doesn't go a day without hearing my name from somebody different? And it worked. Coach Weir called me and he said, hey, I want to hire you to be a video coordinator the next year. And again, it was kind of like leaving Nevada and going back home and going to Corpus all within a month. It was kind of like, we want to hire you. Can you be here next week? Well, okay. At the time, like, this was in the middle of summer. I just signed a lease to my apartment in Corpus. I had to get out of that. I had to pack up a U-Haul, pack up my life, and kind of just stop what I'm doing in Corpus and just drive out to New Mexico. Another 10-hour drive. I just love 10-hour drives, I guess. And so I got here on August 11th, 2 years ago. No, this past year, I guess. No, 2 years ago. And I'm still sitting here today. So it all worked out. But it was tough because you interview with so many people and, you know, you're a human. So doubt kind of creeps in. Like, I'm not getting this job, man. This is the University of New Mexico. Like, I'm not getting this job. And so when I got hired, I did a little happy dance in my car and called my parents and said, hey, we're moving again. So can you guys help? And my dad jumped on a flight and he was down there the next day and we packed up the U-Haul and left. So it was a good little experience for me.
That's awesome. That's a wild ride over, you know, an 18-month period. You go from, you know, Overland, Kansas in your parents' basement, not sure where you're going next, to Corpus Christi, to, oh, COVID, to, oh, now I'm in New Mexico. That's pretty sweet. You alluded to, you know, kind of vid coordinator, kind of is underrated the IT guy of the team too. What's the weirdest kind of like random tech request that you've had or like you know, something that you had to do that you were like, I did not think I was going to have to be configuring this.
You know, you hit it on the head right there. Like, if you're the video coordinator, especially if you're a young video coordinator, you are the IT guy for everybody. And it's not just basketball IT. It could be, I got a call one time from a coach saying, hey, my cable's out. Can you come help me? Well, you know, I don't know too much about cable, but yeah, let's go figure it out. You know, and I like to think if I sit down and stare at something long enough, eventually I'm going to figure it out. So like getting a call about a guy's cable, setting up the Wi-Fi in a coach's house, I've done that. The weirdest one I would say was someone had me come to their office and he called me like in a panic, had me come into his office. Like, I can't close this web browser on my computer. I was like, what? He's like, I can't, I don't know how to get this web browser off my computer. What he did was he blew it up full screen on a Mac. And so when you do that, it takes away the little, like the X and the yellow button and the green button. It takes that away because it's full screen. And so he didn't realize if you just like scroll up, like what I'm doing right now on my computer, you can just bring it back down. Yeah. And so I had to do that. And he like when I did that for him, it's to him, it seemed like I just like split the Red Sea. Like it was like, oh my God, I've been spending hours trying to figure that out. Like, how'd you do that? And I was like, coach, hit the X and he's got to go up there and hit the X. He's like, thanks, man. He was so appreciative. But that was probably the weirdest one. Just, hey, can you help me close a web browser?
That's classic. So, I mean, you made all those moves. What's it like, you know, a guy who grew up in Kansas, you know, and now you're in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Do you like the, you know, the drier heat? Do you like the food out there? What do you like most about, you know, your new location?
Oh man, I love it. It's very similar to Overland Park, Kansas, where I grew up. Is the people down here are really nice. They're very welcoming. But if you would have tapped me on the shoulder during my high school graduation and said, hey, you're going to live in Lincoln, Nebraska, Reno, Nevada, Corpus Christi, Texas, and Albuquerque, New Mexico, all before the age of 30, I would have thought I'd joined the military or something. I wouldn't have believed you. But you know, moving around a lot, you build relationships with people. And then the hard part about it is, like, I was in Corpus for 1 year, like not even a year. I was in there for maybe 11 months, 10 months. And it's like, you build lifelong friendships with these people and you're so invested and you get so entangled in their lives. And like, my parents met people in Corpus, which is a huge deal for me. You know, I have great friends in Corpus still, but then you have to say goodbye after knowing them for 10 years. And you kind of look back on those relationships like, this is one of my best friends. And I literally have only seen him in person about 5 times because I moved away. Or like, this is one of my really good friends. And, you know, we don't see each other every day and we don't talk every day, but I consider him my best friend in life. And so that's always hard. But, you know, moving down to Albuquerque, it was awesome because it's the Southwest. Like you said, it's the desert heat. It's the dry heat. Not very good for your skin. You have to drink a lot of water. The altitude is insane. Like you walk down the street to get your mail and you're out of breath. Like you're bending over kind of like trying to catch your breath because like, you don't know. Wait, you're just like, you thought you were out of shape. Like I thought I'm in pretty good shape before I moved to Albuquerque. Cause like there's no, like the air is very thin down here, but it's a beautiful place. It sits on the base of the Sandia Mountains and it's awesome. It's great down here.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, are your morning runs, Are they a lot tougher now, man?
A lot tougher, yeah. I'm used to it now. I'm used to them now, but it was hard the first couple of weeks because you just can't catch your breath. And it's not even just doing physical exercise. It's just walking around campus. You can't catch your breath. You walk up a flight of stairs to go to your apartment, you're gassed. Like if you have to carry something, you're gassed. And so that was really tough, but it's but now, like, if I go back to Kansas and go out for a run, I can run for days. It's nothing for me to run for days now because the altitude. But, yeah, they've gotten a little tougher over the years, I guess you can say.
Definitely, man. How does that affect the recruits that come in? Do you guys bring the new guys in earlier, or how does that work?
You know, we don't bring them in any earlier. And so, like, it's kind of weird because I got hired here in August. So I didn't get to have a full summer before my first year at New Mexico. And so, you know, you see it with opponents a lot because they're not used to the altitude. And then you have to come down here and play a basketball game. And you're only here for 24 hours and it hits you. And so I remember when I was at Nevada, we came down here and played a game and we got killed, lost by 30 in the pit. Because like after the first media timeout, you're like, all right, we've only been playing for 4 minutes, but you just look around the huddle, everyone's out of, like, out of breath. Like, the coaches are out of breath. It's just like you can see the weight of the altitude kind of on their shoulders. And now being on the other side of it, it's so cool because you can look down on the bench and go, okay, those guys are tired. Like, we get to practice in this and play in this every single day. We condition in this every single day. The other team doesn't. So it's an advantage for the home teams that are at altitude because they're used to it. And when we go play like a different team that is not at the altitude that we're at, it's kind of, you can keep going longer, which is really cool, but it's definitely an advantage on our side.
Yeah, no, that, that definitely seems like it would be something that's empowering to the players and, you know, to be able to keep going and things of that nature. Is there like we were talking about before, I know in the Mountain West, the games are, you know, super competitive. Was there a game that, you know, that you really loved to be a part of and that, you know, preparing for was exciting?
When I was at Nevada, the big rival was UNLV. And, you know, like I said, when we were at Nevada, we had that place, must have the place rolling. And so you were top five in the country and you got everyone's best shot. So every time you walked into the gym in the Mountain West as a top five team, they're like, oh no, like we're packing the place. Like there's going to be 15,000 people here tonight, no matter where you're at. Like we want to come to watch you guys lose. And so I think the two games we had against UNLV at home, the fans were crazy. Cause it's a bit like, it's one of the I think it's probably one of the best rivalries in college basketball that doesn't get talked about a lot.
Yeah.
It's two in-state teams that really don't like each other and that both have great history of college basketball. And like, it's a big deal to people in Reno. Like, you don't say – when you're in Reno, you don't say the University of Reno. You say the University of Nevada. When you're in UNLV, you don't say the University of Nevada. You say University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or UNLV. And that's a huge deal to people because, like, you would never go to Las Vegas saying, yeah, this is the real University of Nevada. And you would never go to University of Nevada, Reno, and say, oh, this is University of Reno. Like, and so it's a huge deal to those people. It's a north-south rivalry. And so the UNLV games are crazy. But I think the best game since I've been in the Mountain West wasn't even a Mountain West game. We were at Nevada playing Cincinnati in the tournament. We were down, I think 20 with 10 minutes, like 25 or 21 with 10 minutes to go against the number two seed Cincinnati that had a really good team. They were picked to go to the Final Four that year by some people. And we came back and beat them. And so that was a huge game. Every game in the Mountain West is tough because this league, I mean, I feel bad for the people on the East Coast because they don't get to see this type of basketball over here. Like the Mountain West has some really good teams, really good coaches and really good players. Like San Diego State before COVID was undefeated. Yeah. Like they were going to be a number one seed. And like they had Malachi Finn, who was averaging like 50 points a game. It felt like no one can guard. And so the Mountain West has historically been a great basketball conference. And if you're a basketball junkie, it's really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you call yourself a West Coast guy now, kind of?
You know, I get that question a lot. I don't think so. Yeah. I was born in Kansas. I went to University of Nebraska, so that's the Midwest. Yep. You know, Andy, I met you while living in Florida. I lived in Texas for a year. This will be my second year in Albuquerque. Spent 2 years at Nevada. I'll go anywhere if the basketball takes me there. And so I don't think I'm a West Coast guy. I like to believe deep down I'm still a Midwest guy and hold those Midwest values that my parents instilled in us. But I don't mind living anywhere as long as basketball's there.
100%, man. I love your passion for the game, man. Like, honestly, it made me love it while just working with you for that month. Like I said, it was like it was like, man, it's like, you know, working with somebody that's really similar to me. But, you know, it's kind of like, man, you watch it and you're just like, dang, it's fun to be around other people like that, man, like that truly have a passion and want to help others, you know, progress. So I would say that you definitely have the true Midwest values, man.
Hey, Coach Edwards, do you have any old Coach Andy stories from that Florida month? It's not often we have a guest on that work with Coach Andy, you know, on the Sundays at least.
How long do we have? I mean, do we have a couple hours? We could sit here and tell stories all day. No, I mean, we spent Braden's in Florida. in the middle of the summer, 2 months right before they left to do all their AAU stuff in July. It was waking up, driving a bus to this little gym. It's not a little gym, but it's a huge gym with no AC. And so the gym's 98,000 degrees. There's kids running around screaming at the top of their lungs. I mean, we're not making great money, so you're eating like McDonald's 10 days out of the week. And it was just, to me, that's when I honestly believe that's when I truly fell in love with basketball. Because like Andy was talking about, when you're around people who love the game as much as you do, and you could sit there and kind of just go over X's and O's. Like I shared a room with a guy who shares a name with Andy, and we had a whiteboard in a room. And all we would do at night was just go over different X's and O's things. Or we'll go to the gym next day, like, hey, Andy, what do you think about this? Or like watching Andy put guys through workouts. Like I still use some of the drills. Like when I was working out players at Nevada as a GA, I would use some of the drills that I took from Andy. You know, and Andy was, I call him the master of the cones, because he had 50,000 cones on the court. And I don't know how he set him up, but I remember just like, I'm piecing together things. Like, okay, how did Andy do this? Or, you know, what moves did Andy teach the point guard at Victory Rock that I can teach the point guard at Nevada when I was working those guys out? And so, you know, being around Andy and Coach Jackson for those 2 months, it felt like, I'm not kidding, it felt like we were there for about 20 years, Mike, but we were only there for 2 months. That's like, crazy. It was a lot of work. But the cool thing about it was, like, we got down there and it seemed like it was us three kids trying to figure out how to do this. And it was like, okay, here's our high school team, like our high school prep team, get those guys ready for the season. Here's the AAU team, get those guys ready for the season. On top of that, we're going to have kids camp every single day. Who, you know, some days you walk in the gym, there's 200 kids in there. Like, oh, hey, Robert, by the way, you're running the camp today.
Yep.
All right, let's do it. Let's go. Like, let's use some of the drills that, you know, Coach Andy did, or let's use some of the drills we did in Nevada or Nebraska at the time, mm-hmm. and let's just run with it. And so it was really fun. And I think that's where I kind of started falling in love with it. Like, hey, I want to do this because coaching is awesome. Like, you get to wake up, coach basketball, and then you get to go home, go to the EV's sports bar up the street, and, you know, what was it? Was it Burger Tuesdays, a burger night? Like, hey, $5 for a burger and beer, and you get to sit there and just watch playoffs and watch NBA basketball and talk basketball all day. So yeah, it was fun.
Absolutely. A lot of drawing on napkins and moving salt shakers everywhere.
Yes.
Lots of
napkins.
Yeah.
A lot of asking. I remember I asked the bartender for a pin about a million times. I think I took all the pins from that restaurant. Again, can I have a pin? I need to write this down. Like, Andy just said something really cool. I'm going to write it down. Or, like, they had a pool table, so you're taking the pool balls and kind of, like, placing them. Like, all right, if you back screen here, you can cut there. And you know, you do this action, maybe he can come over here. And so it was really fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. What's it like? I just realized the connection, and I guess folks looking forward to the college basketball season should definitely check out University of Mexico this year. Obviously, Pitino Jr. is the coach there, Richard Pitino Jr. And there's also Jamal Mashburn Jr., which if you know, you remember the old Kentucky days, it was also Pitino and Mashburn. So yep. What's that like? And has the both generations been in the same room as what's it been like so far with that experience?
Oh, it's been awesome. You know, Coach Pitino, we went through a really rough year last year with Coach Weir. Unfortunately, we all got let go at the end of the year, and I didn't know if Coach Pitino was going to keep me around, if he was going to, you know, name me his video coordinator, what he was going to do, because he was coming from Minnesota, and kind of like everyone else before, he probably has a list of guys he can call that at a moment's notice would drop everything and come be his video coordinator. But when Coach Pitino hired me, kind of asked me to stay and hired me, I was so thankful for him. And it's been awesome. And kind of like what Andy talked about, it's just really good being around guys who really just love basketball. And that's what Coach Pitino is. You know, he is the type of guy I think it's a video coordinator's dream to work for, because no matter what, you know, if I watch an offense from a team in Denmark and I see a cool play, I know I can give it to Coach Pitino. He's actually going to look at it and evaluate it and maybe install it into the offense. And so that's really cool to be around, because it forces me to kind of go search for new things to pique his interest, because he always wants to learn new ways to get our guys better and put our guys in better positions to succeed on the court. And so working for him, it's been really cool because one, it pushes me to watch more basketball, which, you know, sometimes when you're working in basketball, you don't get to watch basketball. You know, you're so focused on your team and your scout or, you know, your practices that you don't get to go watch, you know, what's, you know, Xavier running, what's, you know, Duke running, those teams. And so it pushes me to watch basketball. And he's also just a great guy at the end of the day. Like he's just someone who can, you know, you can go in his office and you're going to sit down and talk to him for 20 minutes and the basketball might never come up. You know, it's just, hey, how's your family? You know, how's your brothers doing? And then he'll tell you some stories because he has a lot of them. And so it's pretty cool to be around him. And then Mashburn, man, the kid's a worker. He's just like his dad. You know, I remember when I first got hired, one of the first Zoom calls we did was with Mashburn and you know, to Patino, obviously his dad coached Mashburn's dad. So he knew Jamal Mashburn Sr. was going to be on the call. I didn't know that. And so I hop on the Zoom call, kind of like what we're doing right now. And I look up and that's Jamal Mashburn, like the Jamal Mashburn in front of me. And so it's really cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's such a cool connection, you know, and, you know, being around that every day, you know, in that work ethic, like you were saying, is what is something that you picked up now that you've been around that you're going to always take with you? That's something that Coach Patino taught you.
Man, I think he has a very unique way of looking at basketball. He wants to eliminate all the distractions for our guys. You know, he wants to focus on basketball and school for our guys. And so for him, looking at him, like kind of teach that, it's like, hey, eliminate the distractions, just focus on basketball and school. For me, I'm lucky. I don't have to go to school anymore. I got my degrees. I'm done. So I get to focus on basketball. And so one thing I'll take from him, it's he's a very simple guy in the terms of it's his family, it's basketball, and it's, you know, how can we make the people that we care about better? And so for me, that's huge because I want to be able to do that. If I'm ever lucky enough to be a head coach, I want to be able to say, hey, like, focus on basketball. Let's focus on our school. Let's focus on our family and friends and the people that we care about in our inner circle. Let's make each other better. And that's one thing I take from everybody in this program. Every day walks in this building. How can we make each other better? You know, it's not about me, the video coordinator. It's not about one of the assistants. It's not about who's right, who gets the credit. It's just about let's make each other better. And that's awesome to be around every single day.
Most definitely. And would that kind of lead to, you know, you getting thrown different jobs and kind of being ready for those types of things?
I hope so. One of the old things I was taught by, you know, some coach way back in the day is you just be where your feet are at. Like, I'm not worried about the next job. You know, if I'm lucky enough to move on from here, I'll go embrace that role and I'll go attack that role with everything I have. But right now I'm the video coordinator at the University of New Mexico. And I know every day I wake up, I know there's thousands of people that would love to have the job I'm in right now. So I'm just going to go attack this job every single day. And, you know, I can't remember who said it, but I listened to a talk, and he says, like, there's a difference between a get-to job and a got-to job. Like, some people got to go to work, and they, you know, they have to go do those things. Like, they have to go do whatever. I get to come to work. Like, how lucky am I that every day I wake up, I can put on the University of New Mexico's T-shirt and come to work and work for a great guy around great people, both on staff and on the team. And so right now, I'm not worried about the next job. Like, I get to be the video coordinator at the University of New Mexico. And every time I say it, I smile because it's so cool to me. Like, I didn't know what I was going to do when I was a manager. Like, I never thought I would make it this far in this business. I was just hoping to get the next job then. And so right now I'm blessed. I know where I'm at. I love where I'm at. And so I get to come to work every day and that's what I'm going to do. And I'm just going to keep attacking it.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're looking forward to, you know, you guys this season, kind of on the comeback season after last year. Wasn't as you'd hope it'd turn out, but you guys are projected, you know, to do much, much better this year. You getting gassed up for the inevitable season coming up here?
Oh, I'm itching for it, man. I'm itching for it. Last year was tough. We were one of the only teams in the country who didn't get to play a home game. Like, we spent months on the road. Like, we were, like, the NBA had their bubble. We had our bubble in Lubbock, Texas. And so, you know, be able to get play in the Pit again, one of the best basketball arenas in the country, in front of our fans. Like, you guys have, I mean, it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful basketball town. Everyone here cares about basketball and cares about this university, which is awesome. And so I'm gassed up. I'm ready to go. I'm itching. Like, I'm starting to look at other teams and, you know, practice is going. And so it's a beautiful time of the year.
Nice. Yeah, we can't wait. You got anything else coming up here in the next couple of weeks before you get rolling, or is it just kind of head down doing research and prepping for the season?
Head down, research. You know, this is when you work your 14-hour days, your 12-hour days, kind of getting going. And it's, you know, like I said, for guys who love the game of basketball, this is the perfect time of the year because there's still zero losses and zero wins. So you can't get criticized on how much you're winning or how much you're losing. So right now, everyone has the same amount of chances to win a national title, in my opinion, which is awesome. And so you just get to help your team get better every single day. But right now, man, it's just head down grinding. It's getting going as much as possible.
Nice. Nice. Now we're looking forward to it. Where do you have any other stories you want to share before we roll?
Any other stories? Not really. I would just say this. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I mean, I listen to podcasts religiously, and every basketball podcast I can get my hands on, I try to devour it because you never know what someone's going to say. And like, maybe there's a little nugget here, or a little nugget there that you can use going on, you know, going forward in your life. So thank you for you two for one, just keeping the game of basketball and kind of sharing the stories of the people you guys have on. I think Andy said you guys have a guy from Australia on. Like, that's super cool. And it's like being able to tell stories like this. I mean, it's not every day you get to sit down and take a breath and just talk the game. And then you guys obviously know the game so well. And so being able to do that here with you two is awesome.
Oh, we appreciate it. We appreciate you coming on for sure. Where can folks follow you this year? Do you got a Twitter or an Instagram, or are you off the socials?
I'm on the socials. I have to admit, I am on the socials. It's 98% just basketball content on my social media. So, yeah, so it's I think it's my Instagram's RJ Edwards, just my name, and my Twitter too, RJ Edwards. But just follow the Lobos basketball, man. We want everyone out there to support us and just keep checking in on us, and we'll get this thing rolling.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cool. Cool. Well, appreciate the heck of it. Andy, you got anything? No, you good?
No, I'm good. I just want to thank you again, man, for real, for, you know, answering that message that, you know, kind of came out of nowhere. We haven't talked in a little bit, but I've always been following your journey, and you've always been an inspiration to me, man. So keep going, and we're excited to see where you guys finish this year and, you know, where the journey of Coach Edwards, you know, kind of goes from here. So I wish you the best. Thanks for coming on, bro.
Yep. Thank you guys so much.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate it, man.